Another evening of Michigan Writers. Tonight is Walter Richard Knupfer, Michigan writer, poet, and he is also the executive director of the Michigan Humanities Council. Welcome to our series.
Glad to be here.
When I was reading your poetry, I was really struck by one phenomenon, I think, and that was how the form or the stanzas were almost classical in that each one would develop a metaphor, an image, and then you'd go on to something else which would twist it just a little bit and very unexpectedly. In fact, the one that was my favorite, contained my favorite line, blue jeans endlessly replicating, I like that. Mm-hmm. It's about remainders, about remainders, and you think, oh yeah, I know what he's gonna talk about, how things, we lose recognition, things get passed by and so on, but just when I think I know, the last paragraph, the last stanza is a surprise because suddenly you're talking about beauty and desire. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about how you use form?
Mm-hmm. I'd be happy to. Most poets struggle with this, of course. Even the so-called free voice, free verse, even street beat poets struggle with question form all the time. It's not simply a matter, as we know, of breaking things up into sections and stanzas and things of that sort. In my case, the poem usually begins as a series of free-formed notions that to associate themselves in kinds of interesting ways. I wonder if we have to...
Can you just go back and...
Sure.
Yeah.
It's a series of free-form notions that the whole object of writing in those early drafts, and I sometimes go through 90, 100, 120 drafts for a poem before it's finished, is to see where those associations lead. And lots of times the words themselves, the puns, the images, will then find themselves in different kinds of pairings and associations. Mm-hmm. And the key, of course, is not to work with form away from where you start. So for me, it's a way of reining the poem in, and at some point, some of the images are far more powerful. They work much more emotionally within me. And I feel that the form at that point allows me to constrain the motion and the emotion of the poem in a way where the poem is almost screaming to get out of that form, but is still very, very much contained within it. And in these later poems, of which this is one, the form that I'm most comfortable with is sonnet-like in a certain way. There are actually three 11-line stanzas. This is what they are. Mm-hmm. But they do the same kinds of things that you're mentioning. They'll take a metaphor or an image or a feeling and go a certain way with that, but each of the three stanzas is doing something different. Mm-hmm. And the third stanza may move in a different direction, but it usually tries to get you back to something that the poem is about in its kernel stage.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're extremely beautifully crafted.
And thank you.
It's one thing I really enjoyed about reading them, because I was looking for the unexpected, and I was kind of expecting the unexpected. Mm-hmm. Your poetry struck me as being cool and somber and meditative, and at one point you used the word untethered, and I thought that was fairly apt phrase to describe the moods and in your poetry, and I was just wondering if this is representative of your work. And of course, you can not agree.
Yeah, the selection from which I'll be reading tonight has a certain kind of tone, mm-hmm. and formal construction, and a very, very sort of tight. There's a lot of feeling going on under them, but there are. They're sort of reined in. I like to see them as sculpted. Mm-hmm. And so they have a kind of iciness to them, but they're about icy topics. Mm-hmm. And yet they're about, I think, the search and for feeling and beauty within the constraints of our time. Mm-hmm. And so that, to me, presents the artist with a wonderful set of questions of craft, of how to shape things and how to refine them and how to make them formal in a way that they're screaming to be informal and not formal at all. And I have done poems both ways. I've let that voice take over. I've worried less about the form, worried less about the observations that the poet and the poem are making, and let the voice take over. But as time has gone on, it's that voice that has actually been formalized in these later poems. So I think I'm arriving at a point where I'm very comfortable about the balance between how I feel and observe and how I describe and express.
A mature.
Yeah, I would say so. These are all fairly recent. Some of them have had their genesis for quite a while, but they've been crafted and polished and crafted and polished over time.
This is, after all, a Michigan writers series, and location doesn't really signify in your poetry, I think, but in the prose piece you'll be reading from tonight, I hope. It's extremely evocative of the upper Midwest.
Yes.
Does Michigan play a very large part in your creative process?
Absolutely. I grew up in Chicago, so I'm a Great Lakes baby, so to speak. And I cut my teeth at the Writers' Workshop at the University of Iowa in Iowa City and lived there for a number of years and loved it there. Had wonderful associations with many fine and brilliant writers and still do. But coming to Michigan for me was a result of my taking the position with the Humanities Council. On the other hand, as a child, I went to the UP all the time and became thoroughly familiar with the northern parts of Wisconsin, Minnesota. I used to do some outfitting and canoeing in Ontario and in the Great Lakes in general. So this is generically about the north, and the novel goes back and forth between a kind of suburban setting, between a rural and urban area that's going through a great deal of change, and a northern area, and the characters sort of weave in and out of those settings.
I expect you'll tell us something about Atlantis, the title of the work.
It's from my first novel. It's called The Empire of Desire, the overall novel, and it's about a centenarian matriarch who is deaf, dumb, and blind, who is in a nursing home and has one daughter who tends to her all the time, and the others in the family are trying to get her land to turn it basically into a theme park in an intersection of some large highways. And it's about how she knows all this and they think she doesn't. And this character, from which I'll be reading tonight on Atlantis, is one of the baby boomers that is caught up in this flow towards the theme park.
It's a beautiful description of a boy's coming of age.
Yes.
It's a lovely
description. Yes, thank you.
When do you decide to write poetry, and when do you decide to write prose?
Well, I don't have an answer to that. I have also written a collection of essays, and actually I have three first books that are just now completed, and each of them has been a parallel work in evolution, which is why it's taken so long to complete any one of them. So I've gone back and forth between those genres, and a lot of time, again, it begins with an emotion or an observation or a feeling, and quickly evolves into something else. And for me, the beauty of fiction is that I feel that the editing, which comes later, is just an attempt to make it really work for the reader, but you can thoroughly trust the voice enough in a piece of fiction that you can let it go and be a storyteller. And I really enjoy storytelling. I don't try to storytell much in poems. Poems to me are almost like compacted essays in some way. On the other hand, there has to be enough of the experience in the poem to grab and to identify with. So I use the two as an antidote for each other. There are certain things I hit a cul-de-sac, for example, in an essay or in a piece of fiction where I feel I can't go any farther. It's like a dead-end alley. At that moment, I'm often crowded into a poem. Into a poem itself, which is a nice feeling.
Yes, it's like you have two outlets for your creative
energy. That's right, yes.
What are you working on right now?
Well, I am working on another novel called Prisoners of Light, which is a very dark novel. It takes place on a lake in the north, mm-hmm. About a promised land community. And there are very different kinds of characters involved in this lake setting. There's some development issues, but mostly it's about the conflict between those who struck out to be free individuals, one of whom is a very, very deranged criminal, and the others in the community who are trying to find community in that area, including some Native Americans who, mm-hmm. whose family has lived there for a long time. So that poses an interesting... I always like to remember what Faulkner says. You know, he said, my favorite thing to do in a way was to put a few different kinds of personalities in a room, have a disaster come up on them, and see how they would handle it. Mm-hmm. And I write the same way. I try to develop the material and see what happens. Mm-hmm. With the characters as they go.
We're going to wrap it up now anyway, mm-hmm. so. Well, thank you, Rick. Walter Richard Knipfer, for being with us this evening, and we look forward to hearing your reading.
Thanks. I'm glad to have the opportunity. It's good talking to you.
Thank you.